Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion, it's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
We're back. We are back. Andor has concluded. I know we've all been waiting to talk for what's it been about? It's less than 24 hours right now. This is Wednesday after Andor. We're back with the Starlight Podcast. We've got the usual suspects. We've got Daddy Sheev. We got Lord Dagovir.
Ew.
Honestly, I don't think there's a lot for me to say in this intro. We've watched the show. People have watched the show. Let's just get right into it. How is everybody feeling? Just give me a little bit of a word vomit from you.
I don't think I have words to describe my feeling at the minute. I'll just say that it is a now I have the right word to describe the feeling. It was such a good show. I loved it, but I'm just like just sad, man. We know what happens. I just feel this feeling of like I really can't. I have no words. Dagovir, how are you feeling?
Yeah, I prepared myself to wear the right shirt. And so there's this stormtrooper on here, and he's been through it. He took off his helmet, and then he's just on the side.
It's like a Popeye's just, meme.
Yeah, he's just done with it, bro. And, you know, they don't know, how we've been talking throughout this entire thing. And it was frame one. The moment the series was over, we all just kind of summoned each other into voice chat, and it was a collective like it was just over. We won, but we lost, and it was this very interesting collective energy of sigh and sadness and happiness. It was a lot of conflicting things, and I don't think I've felt like that since The Rise of Skywalker, and I'm not comparing Andor to The Rise of Skywalker. It's just that feeling of it's over. Yeah. I don't know when, it's over. That's how all I can say is that it's over, and it's very sad, and I feel very empty inside. That's honestly the words that I could use to describe my feelings right now.
Yeah, I think empty was the word that we all used on that call last night. It was like after the show ended, I felt myself like my body relax a little bit. I was so tensed up during the show that I literally physically felt myself like unclench my fists and just kind of try to go over what happened, because I made a TikTok video about 5 minutes after I finished watching it, just word vomiting.
We saw the eyes. Yes.
I had cried a couple of times, and it was more describing how the show made me feel, because I, at that point, I hadn't locked into any of really the plot. I mean, obviously the plot points, but like the specifics, it was just like a feeling. And yeah. I hadn't felt that way since watching Star Wars. It was the Mandalorian season 2 finale. It was the last time I felt that level of emotion watching Star Wars. But based off of like watching a TV show, it was like Game of Thrones, Breaking Bad level of intensity that I felt for that. So it was so hard to kind of piece my thoughts together at that point. But we've had a couple of hours. We've had our night's sleep, albeit a restless one, to kind of simmer and look at all the plot points. We watched some breakdown videos, I'm sure. And I mean, this show is just great. But where do we want to start here? Like, do we want to start with Luthen? Kind of where, like what happens where, like, the beginning of the first episode basically is like we find out that Lonnie calls for the thing, and like he calls for a meeting, and then all hell breaks loose from there. I can't even
describe. This arc of episodes really, like, from the jump, this stuff was going down. Like, you know, after Luthen meets with Lonnie, you know, gets the information that he needs, Lonnie's like panicking, freaking out, you know, about his safety, about his family. Hears everything he wants to hear, and then they pan to his body, and Luthen kills him. I literally screamed no at the top of my lungs when that happened, and that kind of set the tone for the entire episode. Just starting with that, I was like shock off the bat, like, oh my god, like, this is getting real. And then Dedra, like, confronting Luthen inside of his shop with some of the best, like, kind of, like, dialogue and double meanings that I've seen between two characters in Star Wars, when, like, she confronts him and brings the Imperial piece that he originally came to Andor for in season one. And, dude, like, my man was not going to get captured. Well, he did get captured, but he wasn't going to let the Empire kill him. He's going to try to kill himself, going down like a badass. What did you guys think of that whole interaction?
Yeah, I mean, even with when Lonnie gets killed, I was not expecting the episode to just start out right at the gate like that. I walked away to get popcorn, baby. I was not ready. And as soon as I did, Lonnie was dead. And I screamed in the kitchen. I was like, Luthen, he has a daughter. What are you doing? You know? And then, yeah, that was, I mean, but we all knew that this was going to happen, especially when you're in the ISB, especially people that, you know, read the lore and understand, like, hey, bro, there's no escaping the Empire. You know, you're either a part of the machine or you get eaten by the machine. And we see that in the later episodes, which we'll talk about. But I did love how Dedra was just being so unhinged in her own way in all of this, because she is right in her theories and in the way she is. Like, that's why she's so skilled. And that's what I think is so interesting about her, is that she's a freak. She's crazy in her own psychotic way. But she's also right, because she knows these characters so well. And I did like how Luthen and Dedra were just kind of like playing it off. Like, all right, who's going to have the upper hand in the biggest revelation? And then, yeah, she unveils the Starpath unit, which is so cool. And when I saw that, I was like, man, imagine if this show was 6 seasons long. Like, just how much greater that moment would have been in that sequence. And it's sad that we don't have it, but just even still with these 2 seasons, that was so damn good with that whole reveal. And we don't get a lot of blood in Star Wars. And Luthen just takes that dagger, Nautilin dagger, by the way, so that's cool, and just offs himself, like, right there, bro. Dude. And that was very intense, very crazy. And you could also see how Dedra realized that she effed up so much. She's really coming undone in her own way. And I love these characters, bro. Like, I do. They're nobodies, like, honestly, in the grand scheme of, like, Star Wars. No one's going to know who these characters are if you've only watched the movies. But they are good characters, each and every single one of them.
You care about them.
Yeah. Both. And it's just so... I just can't believe we only got 2 seasons of this shit, bro. Damn, man.
It's boots on the ground Star Wars, which is something that I think I like to... I love the Force, and I love getting into, you know, the cosmic aspect of Star Wars. But it's nice to have a little bit of boots on the ground stuff, and these characters are so well written. And I love the fact that when Luthen's talking to Clea, when they're first meeting after he kills Lonnie, he's like, no, you have to go, like, I'll do the burn. He knows that this is like a one-way mission, and he's living this like self-fulfilling prophecy where he knows he's going to die. He's not going to survive. He says it all the time that he talks like in the beginning. He's like, I burned my life for a sunrise I'll never get to see. And then like when he talks to Cassian last arc, he's like, they'll hang us both, like, we know that. So he knows this is coming, and I think he knows that this is the time, because what Lonnie just told him is the most insane, unhinged thing that he has ever heard, and he has to believe it at that point.
Yeah.
Like, why would he come here? Why would he risk his life? Why would he risk his family's life? Like, he believes in this. I just, it's so sad that he killed Lonnie, but it's necessary, and that's his character.
Yeah. There was no other way. There was no, yeah.
There he knows no that he's way. Not getting off. He knows that Lonnie's not getting out of this. He knows that he's probably not getting out of this. Yeah. So he's
every
trying to save
every second he talks to Lonnie, he knows someone is coming. One step closer. And I didn't think he was thinking about Dedra. I thought he was thinking about someone like Krennic or Hyre.
Yeah.
You know? And which, oh God, man, this just, there's, I feel like there's going to be so much to talk about that we may not even finish it, but go on.
One of the things that you have to realize, like, in this show, is that Dedra is like lower level. She is not even like top ISB stuff.
She only got 3 blue. That's it.
Yeah.
That was demoted too.
And I made a video about Dedra right before this podcast, and I said she thinks that she is a bigger piece in the chess game when she's only a pawn.
She's only
the king, the queen, and the rest of the pieces are way above her. We don't even see them except for Krennic in this movie.
Yeah.
So it's so interesting to see her basically be used the same way that she uses other people, and she gets what she asks. Like, she gets what's coming with for her.
Yeah, in the end, it was kind of poetry what ended up with her, but
I really, and as again, you say boots on the ground, and like, this is something you can only really understand if you read Star Wars Legends or Star Wars books. Like, it's people don't really understand what that means, you know, because the movies don't show you like what's going on in Tarkin's mind, what's going on in all these other Imperials' mind, you know. And I think that's the one thing. Like, when I heard that we were going to see the ISB, and I was like, this is like the most terrifying part of the Empire right here. These are lunatics that go crazy. It's CIA on crack, basically, you know? So, and you see Dedra, and yes, you know, yeah, she thinks that she's a big fish, and, you know, in her regard, yes. But then when you see someone like a Tarkin get into play, or like a Thrawn come into play, or even someone like Krennic, who isn't on top with the rest of these people too, but when he throws his weight around, you really get to see, like, dude, the Imperials, like, literally eat each other. Yeah. Even someone like Dedra, who's literally created all of this work and brought out all these people like Luthen and Cassian so they can be disposed of. So just really crazy, beautiful, beautiful ending to all these characters. And I thought it was, like, when I saw it, I was like, dude, that's very expanded universe. The way, like, this guy may not like the Star Wars universe and writing for Star Wars, but he gets it. They all get it.
Yeah.
Like,
we're getting like ISB meetings. Like,
yes.
If you would have told someone, if you would have told me that, hey, in Andor, we're going to get ISB meetings. Like, oh, why do I want that? But then, like, it basically is kind of what you said, Dagavir, where you get in the mind of an Imperial where, like, no, these guys are like actively trying to destroy populations. Like, they're not just like the bad guys for the sake of being bad. Like, this is why they're doing it. And they're putting faces to Imperials. They're putting stories to Imperials. And putting motivations to Imperials that are absolutely terrible.
Yeah. It's not just the ISB. It's like inside the intelligence bureau office where like everything is being heard in the entire galaxy, where they're listening in on everybody and every single whisper of rebellion. You know, like that stuff that you only hear about in expanded universe stuff, you know, and you get to see that finally in like one of the worst parts of the galaxy right before the Battle of Yavin, man. And it's just like, we wouldn't get this. Like, we didn't get it in the movies. We wouldn't get this anywhere else. Yeah. And there's been so many shows in media around the original trilogy, and we have yet to see it on this level in live action, and only Andor brought it out.
And like, and I kind of want to talk about Kleya for a little bit.
Yeah.
Dude.
For me, Kleya in this arc is like,
I'm so glad,
top notch. Like, her character has, throughout this specific season, has expanded so much, and she's such a badass. And she, like, I think we talked about it a little bit earlier, like previous episodes, where there's almost like a prodigy kind of thing happening where. Dagobah, you reference like
the Bane the Knight. Yes. It is. Every character has a mentor that is teaching them. And my goodness gracious, you know, Kleya's got. I was not familiar with her game. like
a dog in her.
She did it so well that the Imperials thought that there was a 3 or 4 man team in the hospital blowing stuff up, and they realized, oh my god, it's not just a man, it's one woman. And it's just like, oh my god, dude, are you kidding me, Clea? Yo, Clea, coming for that dude. Oh my god, dude,
that was she crazy. Was a dog in that episode, and she had to literally put down her dad and marched into that hospital with a plan in mind and executed to perfection. And I love the parallels of I'm so glad to see their backstory finally, because we always kind of got to see a bit of, you know, their relationship in pieces, and then seeing like younger Luthen, like basically having like PTSD and like a breakdown, like he was served for the Empire, which is just great context. So then seeing how like he finds a young Clea and they kind of help each other, and seeing like, oh, what led them to, you know, become rebels, and those parallels into the, you know, the that episode, and then of her, you know, killing Luthen, it was just poetry. It was just so well written, and I loved seeing all that stuff and like what radicalized these people, and getting that backstory and like caring even more about these characters. Like that just made me even care more about them, and dude, I can't say words. When she did that and her tears are coming down her eyes and she's taking Luthen off life support, I'm a wreck. I'm losing it, dude. I never thought I would lose it over like that in Star Wars. What were you guys' reaction to like that part, man? Oh god. I was a mess.
No, you go, Connor. I you haven't said anything of it.
Yeah, I think that her just being like her perfect execution of her mission is all thanks to Luthen's like teachings, like every like she has ascended basically Luthen at that point in execution and all that stuff. Like I think the way that she, well, looking back at like her upbringing with Luthen, like she still like harbors some resentment towards him a little bit, because her entire family and people that she knows were being killed by the Empire. And I think that like it's a weird relationship that they have going on, because he was part of that. He left. He's becoming this like father figure, but not really like a father. Her hatred is almost fueling Luthen at that point, she hates the Empire so much. Yeah. He's starting to lock in and getting, you know, executing that for her. And when they're on Naboo, which is what, they're on Naboo, and he's like, you're going to press this button. And then he protects her at that point. And that's when we kind of see it's still a little bit of like this father daughter. And then they just get closer and closer, and they become probably one of the most lethal duos in the entire galaxy, outside of like a Jedi and Sith combo. Like they are the definition of competent. And I love the way that, first of all, Luthen went out, and I love how Clea executes the plan for the rebellion.
Yeah, man, that was so very Jedi. I mean, I was hoping to see ISB do what Clea did, or Luthen did, you know, or Cassian did, you know. But all I gotta say, man, these girls gotta chill out, because it doesn't matter if it's Darth Treya, Leia, Clea, hair up, hair down, everybody's going down. Lakers in 5, baby. Don't mess with her. Like, that's all I gotta say, dude. I was absolutely thrown off my heels. Like, dude, she was going in there and she had a little data pad, and that guy was like, no, you're only on 17. What do you do? And he just falls down the stairs, crumbles and falls. The plastoid is all over the place. And I was laughing so hard, I almost choked on my popcorn for like 7 seconds, man. I was like, the previous episode where she's like talking to Cassian and she's all like, it's too hard, I can't do this. And I was just like, hey, bro, that's Cassian Andor, relax. Like, and then I saw this episode and I was like, okay, all right, I'm sorry, I did not know. All right, you got it, dude.
Wasn't familiar you with your game.
Yeah, man. Yeah, yeah. No, like Cassian's all like, I've been in this fight since I was 6 years old. And then Clea's like, yeah, bro, I've been in this since 5, bro. What up? You know, like it doesn't matter, dude. She's just right there with them, bro. I did not know how much Clea could ball. I did not know, dude.
No, and it's and you mentioned her like killing the Imperials. Like it seems like that's like something that Luthen teaches everybody that he comes into contact to. Because when we see him, when we see like Cassian help Mon Mothma escape from the Senate, it's almost the exact same play where he's like, "What's his name? What's his name? What's his name?" And then he gets them so calm and then just shoots them. Yeah. And the same thing happens when he's in Rogue One. He's like makes distract them and then kill them. Like it's yeah. Luthen's got to be teaching these kids something.
All these assassins just, you know, just do whatever it takes. Like you can clearly see it. Like they're not playing around. They'll do whatever needs to be done.
Yeah. You guys, I gotta get my cat. He's crying at me because of food. I'll be back 1 second.
No, right? You're good. Yeah. I think I also want to talk about like how the Imperials have been eating each other. Like you can tell.
Yeah, dude.
When after Dedra is basically locked up in prison, like the other Imperial, like out of desperation, comes down to Dedra because he wants help. Basically.
Yeah, her former assistant. Like he wants the help, and that's an interesting dynamic. I'd love to go into is like you can kind of see the parallels between how the Empire is run and the Sith, like kind of like destroying each other and using each other to like gain their own, you know, advantage on top of each other and like rise in the ranks.
That's like, so I mean, going off the Sith, like that was the problem with the Sith in general, and Bane wanted to destroy that. Like they're all infighting, they're all eating each other, and then Bane's like, all right, we're done with this, like I'll destroy all the Sith, so it's just two who can sharpen each other, which is almost, it's almost like what Luthen and Clayo were doing. They were just sharpening each other. But it was, we were talking about how the Empire just eats itself.
Yeah. It's so true though, man. I mean, like, you know that from Rogue One because of Krennic. Krennic's been going around, you know, doing all these things, trying to hide his project, oh my God, don't even get me started on the whole Thrawn versus Krennic versus Tarkin whole thing with all of the defenders and the Death Star. But yeah, dude, it's so crazy that my cat opened the door. My cat wants food so bad, bro. That is crazy, dude. So I'm sorry, guys.
You're sorry. Good, big dog. Yeah, you're good. You're good.
There's back part two. Feed the cat time. But yeah, Connor, like it's just interesting that dynamic that like Palpatine created to kind of like enable his, you know, empire to run, like, you know, strive for the best, like one up each other and kind of create like this infighting, like we do see with the Sith of like trying to like consume each other and like play each other basically for their own game. And we saw Dedra do that in season one with the other, you know, Imperial officer and like stepping boundaries. And then it kind of happens to her and, you know, she ends up in the cell and it's just very interesting. You know, that's kind of like the downfall of the Empire too, is like all because of all this like ambition and infighting that they're not able to like really, you know, work together to, you know, take down, you know, Cassian and Luthen. So
yeah. Everybody's just pawns in the Empire.
Yeah, literally, like, they're all just pawns in the machine.
When you look at like the Rebellion and like the Jedi, those people are working together, whereas everybody is in it for themselves in the Empire.
Yeah, the glory, the personal glory, like the whole thing with Dedra, as we find out, is like it wasn't even her thing at that point for Axis. It was her former supervisor, and you know she oversteps her boundary to, you know, I want the glory. I want to take down Axis after all these years, finally, and just went off on that like mission, and it obviously backfired. Luthen says, "You're not capturing me. Fuck you. I'm stabbing myself," and then loses that important piece, and we see her then in the cell, you know, paying for her actions essentially for, you know, stepping boundaries, and then we her confronted by Krennic. Was
about how much of a diva Krennic
masterpiece.
Is. Oh my
director
God.
Krennic has been one of my favorite characters since Rogue One. I know Connor as well. You are a Krennic super fan like I am.
Yeah,
but that whole scene was perfect. Just the way it was shot, where like at a point you could just see, yes. Like point it had like almost like Michael Jordaning her. And, but what did you think of that whole scene? And it's crazy that we find out basically that, you know, she got leaked like the Death Star plans kind of by accident, and then, you know, basically became kind of the scapegoat. What did you think of that?
Yeah, I think it's tragic because I like to see all the good that I can in characters, because I don't think Dedra is like Palpatine evil. I don't think Dedra is like Vader evil, but I do think Dedra is psychotic and crazy, you know, and it's clear that all these people in this episode, including Partagas, like just have this realization too late. You know, it's like they get so comfortable in their cradle of power. Darth Malgus, deceived quote, by the way. So make sure you read that book. So you see that with the Jedi. You see that with the Imperials. You know, you see that with the Sith. Everybody just kind of gets cozy in their chair until, uh-oh, it's too late. Now the rebellion is everywhere. Oh, now the Jedi are everywhere. Now the Sith are everywhere. You know, and yeah, I feel sorry for Dedra a little bit because of everything that had gone on. And when you see her final moments of everything that was going on, yes, she was just a part of the food chain. There will always be a bigger fish, and eventually it will catch up to you. And she got, bro. Like, that's just the way it is. Like, she overstepped her mistakes, by the way. And yeah, she ended up just biting the wrong hand and screwing herself over, man. All that work going down the drain. So tragic. Tragic. Yeah.
And Krennic calls her basically like a rebel, because throughout the entire series, Dedra has been disobeying orders and like stretching the line, and she finally crossed the line. But the thing is, the previous times that she had disobeyed orders and done something for herself, it's worked. Like,
yeah,
like stuff has ended up being like positive for the Empire.
Yeah. And Partagas was there helping her too.
Exactly. Yeah. And, but this was different. This was, hey, like without telling anybody, she goes, does this, jeopardizes everything, and it fails, which is ultimately why she gets punished. Because if it were successful, if they would have gotten Luthen all healthy,
it wouldn't matter.
Able to talk, like she would basically be a hero.
Yeah, but
because her execution was not there, and it fell apart for her, and it fell apart quickly.
Yeah, the execution wasn't there, and then, you know, because of her mishaps, like this is how they first hear of, you know, about the Death Star, and her even like saying that to Krennic was just gave me chills of like holy shit, like we're getting to the end here, like we're there, like it's almost ready. That was just so well done and shot. And then, yeah,
because I think,
go ahead.
No, go on, Chief. Sorry, I thought you were done, fam.
No. Well, I kind of was. Dude, you got it.
Well, I was just like, you know, you mentioned the Death Star, and I was just thinking, like, I feel like as Star Wars fans, especially like original trilogy fans, we kind of take for granted the Death Star. You know, like we know Luke Skywalker blows it up. It's not that big of a deal. But you really start to see how big of a deal is with Rogue One, how terrifying like the Death Star is. Playing Fortnite, seeing that thing drop every single day, and I see that, oh my God, the ding is right there. Yeah. But also, like, Rogue One, what is the one-off novel that's, I don't know if you guys, I've read it, I can't remember what the heck it's called, but that's where Krennic and Galen Erso basically take away the Death Star from the Geonosians and, you know, the Separatists and everything. Everything's going on with the Republic, then it transitions to the Empire. So you see, like, how it came to be. But then, you know, season one of Andor, and then season two, it's just like, dude, like the Death Star is like a really terrifying thing. Yeah. And it's not even on screen yet. Like people are dying because they accidentally find out about this thing because someone, some idiot in the Empire decided to put paper on the wrong desk.
Is that, they got is the that wrong emails with Dedra, like the files just kind of like came across her desk somehow, and then instead of telling anybody, she was like, "Oh, I'm going to use this to my advantage," and like
that backfired. I think she's lying. I think it was like, "Oh, I just had access to this inbox, and look what I saw." You know, yeah. Because Dedra's kind of slimy too, you know, because that's what she's done. But even still, someone like Lonnie was like able to find out accidentally. You know, they're going through Dedra's inbox and everything, and it's just like, bro, this is a planet killer. This is a people killer, bro. This thing's killing people, and it's not even operational yet. You know, not just with Gorman, but also like Imperials. They're like, oh shit, I didn't mean to walk inside this building.
It's still my confidential. Bad. Like nobody can know about it. Like it's such a top secret crazy mission or top secret project, dude.
And Partagas talks about that. Like,
yeah,
when he's talking to Krennic, he's like,
we can't keep this a secret. Like, we should have been able to like get this operational now, or else we're all gonna die. And that's something that is very interesting to see on that end, where it's like these Imperials are like these top Imperials
breaking
are
out,
to panic. Yeah, they're starting to crack. We were talking about Luthen earlier, how he was cracking, but like now these guys are starting to get put under the gun.
Yeah, it makes sense for Luthen. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. That's exactly what I was getting to. Like, it makes sense for Luthen because he's just one guy and like a few people. And then, sure, there's rebel cells, but like, bro, this is the entire Empire. This is the entire ISB, and they're all like, I can't tell this person who I literally see every day about this crazy thing that's going on. Yeah. And then you see Partagast and Krennic like talking, and it's kind of the most interesting engagement that we've seen with Krennic, because it's like this person is actually his friend, which we don't really see Krennic. Krennic is always like either fighting someone below him or on top of him. And we've never really seen him engage with someone that's like, oh yes, I don't have to be a diva around this person, you know? So it's really interesting. And even Partagast was like, I can't help you any more than I've already helped you, man. You know, like, what the hell?
Yeah, man.
And, yeah, I want to talk more about Partagast too, especially his end. But I just think that it's so cool to see these ISB people who we know are like the most crazy and effective people in the Empire lose their shit. Like, oh my God, what is happening?
The weight of this, you know, project, and the weight of the failure, like the fear in them is so interesting to see that on screen of. Just how much of, again, back to like how everybody in the Empire is just kind of a cog in the machine, a pawn. Like, seeing all that was great.
One of the things I want to talk about with you guys, and I'm interested to see, I'm pivoting a little bit, but like when we see Kleya in the safe house and she's talking to Cassian, she doesn't want to go to Yavin. She thinks that she will be almost like a prisoner. I think she says that she's going to be a prisoner there. I don't want to go there. Like, what do you guys think about how the rest of the rebellion views Luthen, almost as like, almost in this like Saw Gerrera type, where he's like that, like he's out there, he's not part of us. What do you guys think of that?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of makes sense because, you know, Luthen has always kind of been behind the scenes. They don't really know him, but he's been the one like, you know, pulling the strings and, you know, kind of creating this whole thing. So that makes sense from that aspect, that they probably don't see Luthen in a positive light. It's like, oh, we're out here on a jungle planet, you know, eating, I don't know what they're eating on Yavin, probably not the best 4-course meal, 5-course meal in the world. And then, you know, we have Luthen, like, you know, pulling strings and using people and being uncomfortable Coruscant. There's going to be some kind of, you know, I don't know if animosity is the term, but definitely some kind of like feeling by like, oh, we're out here in the jungle fighting for our lives, and you're over here on Coruscant, you know, trying to tell us what to do kind of thing. So I can see, like, from that perspective, why they might not like Luthen, and I can see where Kleya is coming from. And it's kind of tragic because Luthen literally, like, we saw throughout the series, he started this company. He sacrificed everything. Thank you for getting that reference, Connor. Thank you. I think you too, Dagger.
What is this, Spider-Man?
I started this company. You don't have to sacrifice. That's what Luthen did. But yeah, like, it's kind of like tragic. Like, Luthen created like the Empire or the Rebellion, and they don't, you know, they don't really like, you know, like him or
put some respect on his name.
Yeah, put some respect on Luthen. He started this company, man. Like,
crazy that they just treat him the way they do.
Yeah.
And like,
I can kind of see from their perspective why they would feel that way.
I love the scene when Cassian stands on business and is talking to the little like senators and the council, little council. Like the council. He's like, you wouldn't be here. Like, you would not be here if it wasn't for him.
I saved Mon because Luthen told me to and coordinated all of that.
Yeah, he's like, last time I talked to him was when I saved this fucking senator right here standing next to you, who's the face of the rebellion. So put some respect on my name and put some respect on his name too.
That made Cassian one of my favorite characters in Star Wars from that dialogue.
That speech was great.
Like, bro, and my characters are up there for stupid reasons, but like, I felt so proud of Cassian, you know, and I guess it's my Hispanic side, which isn't a lot. I'm Puerto Rican, Cuban, and Italian, so, you know, it is what it is. I'm a mutt. But when he said that, I felt some type of way too, that everybody was treating Luth in a certain way. And Clea, you know, who just got her hands dirty. Like, I just saw this girl just make a championship run and no one was there. Like, no one was bailing her out.
Cameras weren't on. They didn't see her.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I would have said some shit too if I was Cassie. And I was like, bro, y'all better recognize, like, y'all ain't doing shit. This is all Luthen's party. Luthen built this with his goddamn bare hands. Okay. The fact that you even have X-Wings and U-Wings and a K2 droid is because my boy Cassian. So, you know, shut up. And then the fact that Clea, like, feels like she's going to be a prisoner says everything you know about how trash the Rebellion is. Because the Rebellion isn't shit without Luke Skywalker blowing up the Death Star and Han Solo and Leia, yeah. You know, and who we haven't even seen in this whole show. So it just, and that's what's also important about Andor. It's just showing you, like, how fragile this all is and how it's going to crumble, you know? And I felt so bad for Clea when she was walking out of that freaking medevac, whatever, in that area. And she's walking into the forest like she's just going to off herself. In my headcanon, it's Exar Kun in the voices of the spirit of Sith Lord talking to her. But now that's stupid. But anyway, I just felt like I felt so bad that she felt so alienated and foreign that she needed to just do that. And thankfully, Vale was there to help her out. But that's so sad, bro. Like, that's so... You've been in it for so long that the Rebellion... You don't... Like, the Rebellion can't even see you as a friend and an ally? Like, F that, bro. Nah.
Yeah, that sucked. But I'm glad that, you know, as we see then there, you know, Cassian, you know, still, you know, game to save her. Also, can we talk about we finally got, like, a K2SO, like, murder, like...
Horror scene,
dude. That was so great.
I was laughing so hard at that. That was crazy that they did that to that buddy, man. Like, what was his name? Eddie? What's his name? I can't remember what the hell's name.
The supervisor.
Yeah, he's Meat Shield today, man, because that's exactly what he was. K2SO picked him up and snapped his neck. Like,
and then used his body as his shield, and he's just getting shot in the chest.
Hey, man.
Supervisor Hirt.
Hirt, thank you so much, dude. I just know him because he looks exactly like Tarkin. He's like dollar store Tarkin, like the way he looks. It's so funny, man.
Yeah, like a young Tarkin, yeah. But it just cracks me up with K2 is like he's only been in what, like two episodes of Andor and one movie. And he's one of my favorite droids in Star Wars because he's voiced by like this positive voice, like cheery voice. And he's just a murder robot that just flings people around and is using people as meat shields and crushing people's skulls. it was so cool to see him, you know, come in there and save the day and you know, get them out.
I this show was desperately missing his presence. I will say, like, when he was in it, I felt like I was watching deleted scenes from Rogue One. It sucks that we didn't have him at the beginning, but when you see the vision, it makes sense. But these last three episodes were just a different tone because he was in it, man. And the bickering between him and Cassian was, I didn't realize how much I missed that.
Yeah. And like, honestly, like you were saying, like in the bigger picture, it makes a little bit more sense that he wasn't in there to begin with. Cause I think Tony Gilroy said this, he's basically like, you can't have K2 do a lot of the things like with Cassian. You can't do like a buddy cop kind of thing throughout the show because he's a spy. Like, it's hard for K2 to be a spy. He's very noticeable. He's loud. He is funny. So I think it might have changed the tone of the show a little bit as well if he was in there. Because like you said, like, I was laughing at a lot of K2. Yeah. Them playing cards in the beginning of that last episode.
Just drinking beer, like playing with the poker with the boys, him and Melshi did. Oh, that was
exactly. So I think it's
been a few days.
Right.
Like, narratively, it does make sense.
A little more sense for him to be like used less, but when they used him, he was fantastic.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, he was very well used. And then, they kind of, you know, rescue, you know, they're going to rescue Clea. And then we got to talk about Partagast and the manifesto. Yeah. You guys ready to jump
Nemec,
into that?
Oh my God. Nemec is.
I'm so glad that it came full circle with Nemec and his manifesto.
So crazy. Like, I just, Nemec was just a character to me. It kind of still is. But I think that's, again, what I think we talked and touched up on last week or the week before about how people that you've never known, like, touch you and influence you and affect you, you know, whether it's like people online or this video that you saw, you know, or Cyril realizing Cassian doesn't know who the hell he is, you know, which is the foundation that he built all of his purpose on. And Nemec was just some scrub on Aldani, you know, just sitting there talking about whatever left, whatever, you know, and in the Republic and the Empire. And then this kid's freaking manifesto and speech is being listened to by one of the most important people in the entire ISB, where this guy is like trembling and shaking, listening to it, realizing that he lost, you know, and like he lost, like it's they are losing. Like in Partagas's eyes, like the Empire is finished. Sure, the Death Star may not have blown up yet, but like it's crumbling. They cannot stamp out this fire for some reason. They can't
stop the spread. And that's kind of like, I forget the line that he said to the other supervisor, but he was basically like, will it ever stop? Or like, will it ever stop spreading kind of thing? And he kind of has that realization that like, they can't do anything about this. It's going to keep happening no matter what monstrosity they build.
How did he get the manifesto? Was it broadcast? I think yes, Cassian yes. may have he broadcasted it, correct?
Yeah. I really feel like it's kind of like the equivalent of a meme or some TikTok account reposting your reaction of Mandalorian season 2 seeing Luke Skywalker. I'm serious. It has that effect where like my stuff was posted on one of the reaction channels and Mark Hamill tweeted it out with everybody else that was in it. That's when they talk about awesome. In the documentary. Yeah, that's when they talk about in the documentary for the behind the scenes for season 2. So it's like that, where like all of a sudden everybody is seeing it. People that have no business knowing who you are all of a sudden have exposure to this. And that was just like full circle. Like I bet you he doesn't even know that guy is from the Aldani raid, you know? No, which is even crazier.
Did they talk about it? I'm trying to remember. Did they have a line where he's like, who do you think it is?
Yes. Yes. He does that say that. He does say that. That's the last thing he says before he shuts it off, you know? And then, he doesn't even answer. All the guy says is like, they're expecting you down there and they're expecting me to bring you down.
Yeah. Wow. He's like, it's hard to contain. He's like, it's hard to contain.
Yeah. That's what I thought. It's like hard to contain or like hard to stop the spread or something like that. Like, he kind of realizes right there, like you said, Dagger, that like he's defeated. And also, when the other supervisor goes like, hey, I need to bring you down these other people. I don't know if he name dropped, but like dude was probably either about to go to Palpatine or Vader or like Krennic and I don't know, he was going to die. It seemed like anyway for his failure with, you know, losing Clea. So I thought it was quite cool. And then just it to him. Well, I can't speak to just cut to him, you know, with the blaster. And he basically just committed seppuku. Like took the katana out and just, you know, took his own life. Like you realized that you couldn't win. Like I thought that was really surprising.
Yeah, that was tragedy. You know, that was there's a lot of like Star Wars, Anakin Skywalker, I blew up in my own, you know, by my own explosion. You know, it's like really interesting. And part of guess, like again, I feel sorry because I don't know if he's evil. Obviously, he's working for the Empire. But to him, whatever the chaos and order is to him, he thinks that he's good, you know? But you start to see these people unwind like we were talking about. And it's just like, oh, my God, dude. Like, did I pick the wrong side? You know, was I killing
people? Are we the baddies?
Yeah. Well, it's not even that because I feel like they clearly understand there's a certain level of evil that they're doing and they're accepting it because they are the ones that, you know, promoted the, you know, the false flag. They're the ones that allowed the whole Gorman situation to happen. So they're allowing these things. So they are evil, right? But it's not like Palpatine. It's not like Tarkin, you know, who's got like 200 billion kills in his kill count, you know, with genocide and things like that. Real number, by the way, that's just Geonosis alone. So it's like, and Partagas is like, damn, bro, like, I really thought this was it, but this thing ain't going to be around much longer, and I'm taking myself out right now. And it's just like, yeah, I think it's more so the realization of, like, it's happening, I'm done, I'm going to go to a prison, and they're never going to see me again. And I guess this is my fault, but yeah, I think there's a little guilt in there for sure, but I don't know. They're Imperials at the end of the day, so it's hard for me to understand that.
Yeah. You know? I think one of my favorite parts of that scene is like right in the beginning of that scene where we hear the manifesto and we think, oh, like
I thought it was just audio. Yeah. Just
playing the manifesto for us, and then it cuts to him listening to it.
Listening to it, dude. Yeah.
And it was like I have been like recently over the past couple of weeks, like leading up to Andor, I had been seeing a lot of like edits to his manifesto, and it builds a lot of emotion up in me. And when I heard that, I lost it. I was like, yeah. I was started like slamming my on this bed right here. I was just like, no,
let's go.
Like, that's my goat, Namek. Like, let's fucking go.
Let's go.
So that got me that got me really excited. But I also was like super emotional seeing that. I was like, oh my god. Like, and earlier when we hear Luthen talk to Dedra in the shop, he's basically echoing those same sentiments that Namek has, where he's like, oh, like it's everywhere now. You're too late. Like, you're scared of what we're doing. And I thought that was brilliant that they have the same messaging from Luthen to Namek to now the entire galaxy has that message.
Yeah, Luthen was basically like, the rebellion's not here. It's like, what are you talking about? Like, it's not here. It's spread all over the galaxy. Like, basically to Dedra, like, you can't do anything about this. Like, you're too late. That's literally what I think that's what he literally said. Like, you're too late, right?
Yeah, the rebellion has fled. Yeah. Or the rebellion has left. Like, you're too late.
Yeah.
Like, oh my god, I could talk about that scene in the manifesto for so hours, good. Bro.
I could talk about every scene in this last three episodes for hours. But then kind of the last thing was, you know, it leads right into Rogue One, which, by the way, I started watching it a little bit last night afterwards, and it lines up perfectly to what we see at the end of the show, down to like the same jacket that Cassian wears, to like where the Death Star is with Krennic, and all of that, just like so poetic. And even Melchi, like, we even in training, like, the troops, we see like the same people we see in Rogue One, and the intention to detail there was so great. And guys, we have to talk about the ending and Bix, dude. We gotta talk about that. Where, first of all, Dagavir, B2 Emo is safe. He's all right.
Dude, I swear to God, someone saw our clip about us ranting about him leaving, and because all over Twitter, like 4 or 5 days after, that's all anybody was talking about was B2 Emo getting left. So I think we had a say in that, and we definitely influenced that. Because I think a lot of people don't remember. They did. They forgot. They just were too busy about Brasso.
So much
dying.
Going on. Yeah. They're like, oh my god, where's B2 Emo?
Yeah, they did not know, dude.
But then you just see him playing with like his little droid friend, and he goes like, "I win," and I'm like,
"That was so cute. That was adorable."
Dude, and then it cuts to Bix, and that she's holding, you know, Cassian's child, and just knowing that what happens to that man, and then even hearing early in the episode about Vel telling Cassian like, "You should go see Bix again," but she like doesn't tell him why, and like drops a little hint of like, "Oh, like you should go see her," like. I forget the line she specifically said, but then seeing that at the end, I literally screamed at my TV of like, literally, no. Like, I hit like a Darth Vader, like, no! Like, we know at the end of episode 3, but dude, what'd you guys think of that ending?
I thought we predicted that she was pregnant. I could have sworn we had talked.
I don't remember that conversation on the pod. Maybe
I was ranting and just. But
I don't remember predicting that. Yeah. I was entirely shocked, but now seeing like the, seeing the little hints they threw in, you know, throughout the episode, it all makes sense now. But dude, like, it's just so tragic that with her video, and then knowing that like he never comes back, just. And we literally see him get into the U-Wing and go to Kafreen, the Ring of Kafreen, right? Like, that's where he is in Rogue One. And, you know, knowing what happens to him, it's just so tragic, man. I'm so upset. What did you think of that?
Y'all know how I feel about the ending of Rogue One now. You know, no disrespect to Jyn Erso. I'm just saying it, bro. You know, like, everything that you've been through with Bix now, hey, I don't care if it's the end of the world or not, all right? I'm just saying, you know, that you got your hands around another woman, All right, Bix is right there.
You didn't know. I think it was more platonic in my opinion, but you know.
What the fuck you talking about? Why?
He didn't kiss or anything. Like,
oh, with Jin? With Jin? Okay. Yeah, I get. Oh, so I've talked to my sources, and they all say the whole end of the world thing. Okay, I get it. All right, I'll give you that. All right, but I'm just saying, man. It just I don't know if Bix would be okay with that. No, that's nice. After everything's going on,
Dave,
you know,
I was about to die to the Death Star. What did you want me to do?
But I'm more upset at the fact that I know that I just thought they were so good for each other. They were so good together, and now that they're taken away, and oh my God, this kid is nameless. We don't even know a name. We don't want to know what's going on. I'm like, where is this kid at? Bring him in the sequel trilogy. What the hell is going on? Come on, stop teasing me. You're making veins pop out of my head, dude.
Oh my God. Yeah. No, it was tragic to see that. I'm a little disappointed that we like. Just with the fact that I feel like Bix was a little bit sidelined in that last arc. Like, I like that she made the decision to leave. I'm glad she like didn't like die just for Cassian to feel sad. In hindsight, I'm glad that they didn't do that to her character. It is just tragic. Like it's very dramatic for them to like make her like be pregnant. Like it's, I think I was listening to like a Star Wars Explained video, and he's like, it's almost soap opera ish where they did that. But I think it just makes it even more tragic. Every time that there was a reference to something in the future that Cassian would make or any of these characters would make, it's like they were twisting the knife that was already in my gut. So
the three-sided knife, boy.
Yeah, it was so like it everything was amplified, and that whole montage at the end was something that really broke me at where seeing like where everybody kind of ends up, like looking at Clea who wakes up to a sunrise that was created by her and Luthen. That the sunrise that Luthen wasn't able to see.
Yeah.
And that was beautiful for me. I think that we can go into a little bit about Dedra where she ends up. Yeah. I really enjoyed that. I enjoyed her seeing her where I'm sure she put a bunch of people in those prison cells.
She ended up in the same spot after all that. It's kind of poetically tragic in the sense of like, you know, like you said, Connor, she put so many people there and she was just trying to, you know, what she thought was right and ends up in the same spot. And basically it looked like it was like a Narkeena 5, like kind of, you know, like this, I don't know if it was the Narkeena 5, but it was like the same kind of prison. I thought for a second she might just, you know, go on the zappy floor and just end it all, but she kind of just breaks down in her cell, and that was just kind of really powerful at the end there.
Yeah, it ain't no happy ending for her, man, because she's probably building the Super Death Star, you know, straight up. She's probably building the second Death Star.
Yeah, building more parts.
Straight up, yeah, no, and she's not getting out until the Rebellion rescues her, to be honest. Like, that's it. Like, you're done. And that, in my opinion, was the only way I felt like her story was going to end. Because of how the Empire works, they're always eating each other. That's just how it's going to be. Out. Yeah, and the moment I saw her demoted after, you know, the Ferrix debacle in season one, and then we see her like, oh, that's it. I was like, damn, bro, is this going to be like a tragic, like just descent for this character? And it seemed like it was for a lot of the Imperials that were in the show. So yeah, no redemption for really anybody. And Bix is one of the only characters that really gets to like live fully, you know, going from, you know, being herself on Ferrix with Cassian, you know, and then seeing her husband / boyfriend die, and then, you know, hooking up with Cassian again, and then getting sexually assaulted and then interrogated and tortured, and then leaves her other man, and then has a kid, and then actually has a good life from what we understand, which is very rare in Star Wars.
Oh my God. Yeah.
By the way. So for these characters, and yeah. And even someone like Dedra, it's also very rare for a character not to die and still get to live and suffer, interestingly enough. So, yeah, a lot of characters that can still go very far. And I don't know if we're going to get any expanded universe work, but that Cassian and Bix's kid right now is one of the most interesting characters in all of Star Wars right now for me, because is this kid going to be Force sensitive? Is this kid going to go off and do things for the Resistance, you know, for the First Order or whatever it is? You know, I'm really curious, man. I would love to see some smuggling Jedi in New Jedi Order with Rey and everybody. Yeah. But that's just me. That's just me, man.
Speaking of the Force, my Force healer is back at the end of the show, baby.
She knew he was in the place she predicted a year ago.
And he gives her the little nod. He's like, hey, you're right. Like, she knows that he's going to deliver a message. And that, I literally just got chills like thinking about it, because there's something about the mysterious, like the mystical Force that got me. And I think I texted this in our chat last night. Like, it gives me the episode 4 A New Hope mysticism of the Force. Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know if it's the way that she's dressed, if it's the way that she looks, and it's the way that she acts. Like, that gives me, that chokes me up, and that gives me a little, like, it gives me chills that's like how I felt when I was a kid looking at the Force.
It's mysterious. It's exactly what the Force should be. And I'm not trashing any project, please understand this. I'm just saying, like, when you watch A New Hope, when you watch the original trilogy, there's something about, like, can you actually lift a rock? Whoa, you know, you can shoot these lasers out of the star and then push them inside this giant Death Star and blow them up. Like, it's just like, wow, the Force is crazy. What can you do? You know, and seeing her from that perspective, because you don't know anything about her whatsoever. And she's even telling you, like, I don't know. I just know you're important and you're going to have to do this. And that right there, from him healing, you know, him getting his blaster healed and then doing that, it's just like, it's so the Force in Star Wars. And this girl isn't even a damn Jedi, bro. No. Like, perfect. Like, bring it back, baby. Bring it back. Yes. That's what I want to see more of, man.
Bring back the mysticism of the Force. Anything in Star Wars that is mysterious. It hits so much. Like, the Bendu hits so much when I watch it in Star Wars Rebels. Like, anything that's like, oh, like I love the scene, and I'm going to bring it to The Last Jedi. I love the scene in The Last Jedi when the kids are playing with the figure of Luke Skywalker, and it's like the legend of Luke Skywalker, and like the legend of the Force. Like, he can do these things. He can stand in front of an AT-AT, take a million shots, and still live. Like, that is the mysticism of the Force that I absolutely love.
Yeah. I do not like The Last Jedi, but I liked that part, because that is the Star War, you know? That's all I'll say about that, because I'm really passionate about that reason. But yes, I understand too, and that's a very good part of the movie. There you go. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, no, I don't know, man. I just, it's, you know, because you guys know me, how critical I am about no lightsabers in the Force, yada, yada, yada. But it's just like, when I see parts like that, I'm just like, can we have 12 more episodes? Like, please, you know, like, just please, you know, and Tony Gilroy says this stuff, and I don't get what he's saying. Like, you know, Darth Vader is hard to write, or, you know, the Emperor is hard to write. Like, well, come on, bro. You don't got to write. Just put them in there, man. Like, it's hard. They don't got to say anything, man. Like, you know, but I understand what he's saying. I get the idea of, like, this is the way he does it. We don't want to just put in a character just to put it in there. Remember Barry's. I understand. You know, it's writing. This is the way we do it. But I don't know, man. I just feel like, even with how good this show was, I still believe it could have been, wow, you know, way up there, you know. That's just me, though. Yeah.
I think I might disagree a little bit, because, like, the aura and the mystery of, like, Vader and the Emperor's, well, they mentioned the Emperor a bunch of times in this show.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, his, like, for me, that, like, mysticism, again, we go back to that, is like, it's still a presence. Like, you always know that the Emperor is there, and it's almost sometimes more powerful to be like, hey, like, we know he's there. And, like, even when there's a line in this where K2 talks about, like, hey, I was at this parade, like the emperor.
The emperor was there. Yes, that was amazing. Yeah. You know, because I know, and he also remembers, which is crazy because synthetics, you know, and technology, yeah, it's not, Force obviously is not supposed to be, you know, the Force sensitives are not supposed to be droids or anything like that. It's all life. And the fact that he still remembers because of the Emperor's aura, even after being rerouted and everything and all that stuff is absolutely crazy. But it's not even like Darth Vader. Like, I would just love to see an Inquisitor just like track down people on Yavin, you know, and go crazy, you know, and whatnot. But that's just me wanting my, you know, my Star Wars, the mm-hmm. stuff that I like about Star that's Wars. Fair. Yeah. So, but again, like I can't agree to say that this is the greatest Star Wars media ever, but I can agree that it is one of the best Star Wars ever.
I think it was peak. Like, I think this is peak. And the question I find myself asking now is like, what happens now? Like, I feel like any other Star Wars project, if it's like not this good, I'm going to just kind of be disappointed. Like, I don't know. Like, how do you guys feel about that? I know we talked a little bit about it last night too, with like, all right, we can make a start, not to like talk trash on like any other Star Wars project.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
I like those for what they are, but like, we've been taken to a level with this series and I want to stay at this level. And now I'm worried that we won't get back to this level because of,
Well, I think we've, looking at like other Star Wars projects, like I keep referencing Star Wars Explained a lot, but like he had a reference that says that he always says that Star Wars is a buffet where it's like, hey, you can pick and like, hey, I want more of this. I like this. I like this. I like this. It's all Star Wars. It's all really good. Like, I think we've been exposed to a level of effort that hasn't been met. And that's not to say that a show with Jedi and a show with Sith can't meet that level of effort, because it can. Exactly. It just hasn't yet.
Exactly, Connor. That's a good point. Exactly, bro. Yeah. Like you guys know me. I don't care what anybody says. I still think The Mandalorian, the first episode and the first two seasons of Mandalorian are still like the best Star Wars TV, just because of how it just captured the world. I explained this before about Baby Yoda and how people that didn't even watch Star Wars knew who Baby Yoda was. You know, like, it's just nothing in Andor has captured people like that yet. You know, not yet. Doesn't say that it can't, but not yet. But with these other shows, it's not that I don't like them, because I love them. I talk more about them than I do Andor. But there is a clear difference in the way this looks, in the way it feels, in the way the writing is, in the way the acting is. We have not seen that for at least Star Wars TV and some movies. You know, that is going to be the problem. No matter who the person is, they're going to look at a show like The Acolyte or Kenobi, and they're going to ask questions. Doesn't matter what intent that they have, questions are going to be asked. And after the fact, that when these shows come out, whether it's The Mandalorian and Grogu or Ahsoka Season 2, and we're looking back at this and saying, what the hell happened? I don't know what's going to happen to Star Wars shows in the future because of the criticism that they're going to get because of Andor.
You're going to get compared to the show because of the level that it reached, no matter what. No matter like who the director is, like you said, Daggavir, no matter like what the writing is, like it's going to be compared to this show because of the standard and precedent that it's set.
Yeah, man. Yeah. And that's the stuff that I was telling you about before the podcast. It's like, it goes into a very elitism for Andor. Yeah. And I personally feel like that elitism, where it's tearing down other Star Wars projects, is just as toxic and nasty as that other side of the fandom that just tears around everything. And that is what I'm terrified of, is to the point where the own fans that love to eat this stuff don't want to eat it anymore because they ate at a different buffet, that the Andor buffet, you know? Yeah. So, and I don't want it to be an excuse, because, you know, someone was talking to me today with the video that I made on my face TikTok, not my Lord.
Yeah. We love that.
My face TikTok, you know, and they were all like, comparison is the thief of joy. You are correct, but I also think that's an excuse. That's an excuse to allow projects not to be the best that they possibly can. Yeah. And I'm telling you right now, if you got a show with Jedi and Sith that if you have an Andor in the Old Republic.
Dude.
Like, it doesn't matter where it is. If you have an Andor in the sequel trilogy after Rise of Skywalker, like, I'm just saying, you know how everyone talks about how Marvel did this with their whole Phantom and every movie was the same? Bro, just the template is here. The template is here. Do not let Tony Gilroy walk out of this damn office, bro. I don't care.
Lock him in.
Like, I don't care. Like, just let him do this. Show him A plus B plus C equals this. And start applying it to every project. It can be a comedy. It can be a horror. It can be cheery and fun. Just like, what's the damn one with Atten? I can't remember it. Jesus, I'm so bad.
Skeleton Crew.
Yeah, just like, it can be all of these things. Yeah. But people, in my opinion, just don't have enough imagination in their head to realize Star Wars can be this good on every single level.
Yeah, you know? I would argue that Skeleton Crew is like in the upper echelon of Star Wars shows because it doesn't try to be something it's not, and it is really good at what it is. Like, it is really fun at being, it's really good at being fun, whimsical, and it's the same thing with Andor, where Andor is really good at being serious, political, and like, it's like, if you stay in that lane and put all your effort towards what you want this show to be, like, it can be so, so good. Like, the Mandalorian season one specifically is like so hard into the Western tropes. It's a really good, like, Western show, basically. Like, but it's in Star Wars. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's as long as you make a good show that's in Star Wars, that's the recipe for the future of Star Wars. And they can do it. Like, they can step up to the plate if they want to.
Yeah, man.
They've shown that they're capable. Time to hit a grand slam.
Exactly. Say that word again. Say that word again.
What? Grand slam?
No, capable.
Capable. Yeah.
Capable. That's right. That is a word. No, seriously, that is a word that people thought Disney could not do. Especially like people that wanted George Lucas to sell this stuff. They are capable. They've always been capable. And that's the problem. That is going to be the problem because that, like you said, this is always going to be pointed back now, no matter what, whether it's a show, movie, video game, whatever it is.
Getting compared. You know?
And I am worried that this may be a problem going forward because I'm not saying that anyone in Lucasfilm can't do this. It's just the bar is set very high now.
You've set such a high bar, with this now.
It's
I think maybe more talented writers will
maybe inspire,
gravitate towards Star Wars now if they're allowed that sandbox to play in. Like, I think Tony Gilroy is paving a path that could be followed by other people as long as they are allowed to do what they want to do within the constraints of canon, obviously.
Yeah. But let
them have their
own. But there's still problems with Andor. There are still problems with Andor. Especially aesthetically. Because there are times when I'm watching the show where it does not look like Star Wars because everybody's using a data pad and an iPad to talk to each other instead of holo terminals and holograms. It's a nitpick. It's a very, 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 very strict nitpick. But it is a nitpick nonetheless because I think like there are parts of this show that probably could have been evolved a little bit more. But that's such a good problem to have. Like, you're telling me the one thing we have to do is just make it look more flashy and Star Wars-like? Out of the writing and the acting of everything else, that's the one thing we could fix to make it look better? You know? That is a huge good problem to have. And yes, I hope you're right, Connor. Because I hope people come into Star Wars because I do believe that writers are intimidated by Star Wars.
Yeah.
To even step into
by Disney, too, of like, maybe like restrictions they've had in the past. But like, with Tony Gilroy, it seemed like he was given a lot of directive freedom to just, you know, obviously within the constraints. And he even said he's not a big Star Wars fan, but he put some lore stuff in there that I was like, okay, let's go.
Yeah, because they learn. They have to learn, too. Like, this guy's using the word canon. No, ain't nobody outside of a fan knows what the hell canon means, you know?
So that's what I hope. I hope that for the future. That was a good point, Connor, that, like, other directors are inspired and they're given kind of the same freedom that Gilroy got here, and I think we'll be okay.
When the Star Wars fandom loves you, there's no better feeling. Like when you make a really good product and the
the fans appreciate the product. Like you'll look at like Star Wars celebrations now where like the prequels, like all of these kids that grew up with the prequels, like we're adults now. Like we are like so thankful for the stuff that happened in those movies that like Hayden Christensen loves going to all of these events and things like that. Like it's super cool to see. Like Ahmed Best, like we love him as like an actor. Like he's I don't know, like I think it's so rewarding to be something positive in the Star Wars fandom. And even I've felt it too with like videos, and I'm sure you felt it too, Dagovir and Johnny. Like you're part of the online fandom, and like when there's something good and you find a community that is is positive with you and can have discourse with you, and it like having this podcast with you guys fires me up to talk about Star Wars and inspires me to make more videos. And like it's improved my channel too. Like my videos have been doing well on TikTok, and I think it's a large part because we always talk about it and you guys make me excited to talk about it.
Yeah, because you're not alone anymore, you know, and I'm not saying that you were alone or anything like that, but like I think the Star Wars fandom and other fandoms are very easily isolate people. You know, I got invited to podcasts and everyone and everything around, but that was when like people just wanted me on there for me to yell and let's yell, let's go and whatever. My energy, cool, great. But like the Andor experience with you guys has been really fun because I talk to people that don't have the same opinions as I do, but they are well-versed and they're not assholes. And it makes me want to talk for 4 hours, even though I'm sweating here in front of these lights for two. You know, and it's really fun. And I hope you're right, Connor, because you're kind of cooking about the whole Tony Gilroy thing. But I also feel like still Star Wars doesn't take enough calculated, well-executed risks.
Yeah.
You know, and Andor is one of them. I will not say the other ones, but I still think like, why have we not gotten a whole movie based around Timothy Zahn or Matthew Stover or James Luceno's writing, you know, Charles Soule, Kevin Scott, like these are bars, like these are people that are working in the High Republic and expanded universe and legends and new canon. Like, why hasn't that happened yet? Why can't they be involved and bring their ideas that they've had in the expanded universe to live action? There are plenty of projects that could have used them in some form. Even someone like Chris Avellone, who's literally worked on Knights of the Old Republic, like, hello, you know. So we have the tools. We have the tools here. We are capable of doing this. What is stopping us? What is stopping us? You know, so
it's just a leap of faith. That's all they need to do.
Jesus, man. We're so close. We're so close. Mm-hmm. You know, Krennic, we're this close. I'm hyped, bro. Andor is one of my favorites. And I don't know, bro. I'm gonna have to vent to you guys. You guys can be my new therapist now about this shit. So
dude, it sounds like we have to go watch Rogue One now. I kind of want to go watch it now. Now we're gonna see everything in a whole new light because of what we've just seen.
I don't know, Connor. You better wrap this up, bro, because I'm gonna be just talking about so much other shit.
I was about to say there's so much more that we could just yap it about, but. I think
we're amped. That's it. We're just amped about these things.
Yeah.
And we're going to keep going. All right. We're going to keep making episodes. We're going to keep talking. And we'll get a whole bunch of topics to cover throughout the summer, throughout the fall. And then we've got Star Wars Visions, which I absolutely love in October, Dagobah?
October 29th. Yes, and then we got the new High Republic book coming out June 17th, and a bunch of stuff coming out, man. So don't worry, I got you in the High Republic. Don't worry, we got it.
Let's go.
Nice.
Let's go. Yeah. I love the High Republic. But we can talk about it later. But appreciate everybody for listening to the Starlight Podcast. We'll be back here very shortly. I'm moving to a new place here in the next couple of days. So you'll see a new setup next time we hop on the mic.
Let's go.
But we appreciate everybody for listening. May the force be with you. Have a nice night.